C4. Number 14A.
We come to the second part of the chapter on spiritualism. And that second part is concerned with how to uncover what is real and what is unreal. We have seen in the first part that if we analyze reality, we come to the insight that only that which is built on ideas is really real, and that only ideas constitute the identities of being, soul and life. But then if one has seen that reality is of the nature of idea, and idea can only be grasped mentally, not materially, the great question comes up, what kind of mentality do we need to have in order to see what is real and what is unreal? In other words, we see that both, this is the main point, that both Christian Science and spiritualism deal with the mental. The great question is, what kind of mental? What kind of mentality? Christian Science is the spiritually mental, because the old overtone is spirit. So Christian Science is the spiritually mental, whereas spiritualism is the materially mental. So we have to see that alone, to go from the realm of matter into the realm of the mental doesn't really solve a problem. And that therefore, though things happen now in the mental realm and no more in the material realm, that they do not need to be extraordinary phenomena that cannot be explained because they happen in the mental, nor do we have to think that everything that happens in the mental is divine, that it is something extraordinary. But we have to see and to uncover here now that only the spiritually mental is real, whereas the materially mental still roams in the realm of illusion and of nothingness. So Christian Science, I repeat it, is showing the spiritually mental realm. Spiritualism is showing the materially mental realm. You can see when you read the second part very quickly that it has to do all with the mental realm, because here she will speak about mind and mind's ideas, about thoughts. She will compare mind reading, divine mind reading, with mortal mind reading. She will speak a lot about the mental forces and mental powers, the mental methods, the mental states. And every time we have to do with the mental, we have to be very careful. Is that mental spiritually, or is that mental material? Is it the material mentality, or is it a spiritual mentality? Ideas are spiritually mental, whereas illusions are materially mental. The spiritually mental is true, the material mental is untrue. And in this way we can uncover what is true, what is not true, and you can see why in the second part the synonymous term mind and truth play such a big part, because only that mind which is spiritual knows the truth. That mind which knows, which is spiritual, knows the truth, whereas that mind which is material can never know the truth, is always erroneous. So she compares here really the true mental state with erroneous states of mind. These are terms that she will use in this second part. Therefore, she will compare really the true perception, true truth, perception, mind, versus the wrong perception, which is illusive. We can see that only that mind which is spiritual, namely the mind of Christ, can really see what is true, whereas the human mind, which is to a great extent materially minded, really can never see the truth about the situation. I think if we have established this distinction here, we understand much better the seven subjects that she is presenting in that second part. Let's take the epitomes you have in front of you and just see how in these epitomes we always see the comparison, so to say, of the same phenomena when viewed at from the point of view of Christian Science and when viewed at from the point of view of spiritualism. See, this is the great point, that we can have a phenomena, and either it is a phenomena of spiritualism or it is a phenomena of Christian Science, of reality. And only if we can see the cause of that phenomena can we really see if it is true or if it is wrong. So each time we will state it from the point of view of spiritualism and then from the point of view of Christian Science. If we start with mind, she says we have a basis. What is that basis? There's no basis, is mind. Mind is the only basis. So she starts out with the basis and shows in spiritualism the basis is really human beliefs and hypotheses. Can you see the counterfeit of mind is human belief, hypotheses? Whereas in Christian Science we are base ourselves on what? On the fact about that? On the intelligence of the mind of Christ. Can you see what she wants to say? What is your method with which you can distinguish between reality and unreality, between if a phenomena is right or if it's wrong? If you start out in spiritualism from the basis of human beliefs and hypotheses, you will never find the reality, the truth about the situation. But if we go out from the intelligence of the divine mind, then we will always recognize the truth of a situation. She takes as an example in the next subject, spirit, the question of strength, the strength of spirit, asking, wherein lies strength? What gives strength? So you see what she is doing. She has a phenomena called strength and says, is strength really a divine manifestation, or is it the manifestation of the human mind or not? And so she takes here that in spiritualism you have strength that is derived from mysticism, that mysticism can give strength to something, whereas in Christian Science, in the mind science, we derive our strength really from the apprehension of truth. For example, she takes the example of tea and coffee drinking, you know, saying, well, if you drink tea and coffee, you think, I drink it, and then I can go on with my work again, I get some strength through drinking coffee or tea. So let's have a cup of coffee, let's have a cup of tea. It wakes us up and we can get on with the job. Therefore we believe, you see, that in coffee or tea is strength. Whereas she says true strength comes only from a comprehension of truth and not from coffee, not from matter. And we know very well how true that is. How very often people say, well, I was very tired and then I took a real good strong cup of coffee and then I could go on working for another 2 or 3 hours. But we also know that if we rest in consciousness and begin to relax by seeing the truth about being, that this gives us also strength. Both methods are showing forth the same phenomena, strength, and therefore if we do not know the distinction, we could see strength is strength, and that's that. No matter from where I get it. The main thing is I get strength. So here is a phenomena called strength that can be the effect of two completely opposite sources. The one from matter, the other from a spiritual insight. Or she takes another example and says, look here, you have an arm and you move it. How do you move it? Just because you have the will to move it and you think I want to move it, and so the arm moves. What happens? Therefore, mortal mind or the human mind, the willpower, is that which can move matter, because muscle and arm is matter. And we think this is quite natural, but the moment the spiritists come and say we can move a table, like in table, what is it, table tipping, huh? That in table tipping, that through mental means you can move a table, then everybody says this is quite an extraordinary phenomenon. But behind lies the same law, namely that mortal mind can move matter if it believes in it. That's why dear Uri Geller can break a spoon just by thinking about it, and he doesn't think that this is extraordinary. It is only how we are cultured. If we would have been cultured in spiritualism or in, say, psychokinetics or in telekinetics, if that would have been our ordinary way of thinking, we would think nothing of moving a table just by thinking, by thought force. Just as we can move the arm by thought force. There is nothing different about it, except that we are not trained to do so. I don't know if you have seen or if you have heard, I have recently heard how when Uri Geller was on the television, he tried it out, especially with children. He felt that children are much more receptive for it. And he was talking to the children on the television and said, now you go and take a spoon and take a watch that does no more work. And you think the way I think, and you just think by rubbing that spoon that it will bend. And apparently the percentage of result was quite high. Apparently in Japan, playing it with children, he had a 40% result. And over here, I think it was much smaller, about 10 or 15% with the children. With the grown-ups, it's more difficult because they don't believe in it. The children still believe in it. The Eastern believe even more in it because their whole culture is believing in the mental. I have known various people whose kids could do that. They played the game with Uri Geller, and the spoon did bend, and the clock that didn't work did work and began to tick. You see, it's only education that makes the difference. We are educated that only that matter which is infused with our nerves and with our will, namely the body, will react on human thought. But that a body that is outside of our thought or our brain will not move. But this is only a matter of education. That's why the spiritists have no difficulty whatsoever to move a material object just through thought transference. This is what she takes up here, telekinetics or psychokinetics, and shows that this is a belief just as another belief. That the belief in telekinetics is the same as the belief of moving an arm with our human will. So there is strength or power in the human will, just there is strength and power in the divine mind. The question is only, when does it work and for what purpose does it work? The human mind's power doesn't work for the purpose of the divine mind, it only works for the purpose of the human mind, that's all. It always, you see, within the realm of mortal mind, everything is possible to mortal mind. And this should be no marvel, because it roams in its own realm. The question is only that we shouldn't find that the phenomena within the realm of mortal mind is something extraordinary. And because it's extraordinary and not common to us, that we say this is a higher force. This is an extraordinary force. This is a divine force. There we go wrong. Or she takes up a third subject of soul, and again takes up the same one phenomena, the phenomena of immortality, and says, here is the phenomena of immortality. The spiritualists believe in immortality, the Christian scientists believe in immortality, the spiritists prove immortality their way, and the Christian scientists prove immortality their way. Which one is now true? How can you distinguish between what is true and what is wrong? Here in immortality, we have the epitome that spiritualism can give no evidence of immortality. Today, perhaps I wouldn't say it so clear, because they have an evidence of immortality, but fallacious. Namely, they say we have the proof of immortality because we have the messages of the spirits that have departed. They talk to us, they appear in the spiritistic seances, they write letters, they communicate with us through table tipping. So there is a proof for them of immortality. They have, on their level of mortal mind, have a proof of immortality. Whereas Mrs. Eddy comes and says, the only proof of immortality is if we can deduce it from God, and not from a phenomena. Because that phenomena of immortality that the spiritualists give is the phenomena of mortal mind, that mortal mind believes what it sees and sees what it believes. So within the realm of mortal mind, all the tricks are possible. But they are never reality. They are always the play of mortal mind, of illusion. And so Mrs. Eddy makes that terrific step and says, only that which you can deduce from the synonymous terms, only that is real. No matter if the phenomena is in spiritualism the same as in Christian science, you have to see what kind, where really the basis, the origin lies. The same she brings up in the fourth subject, principle, where she shows that divine mind reading in Christian science rests on science, whereas in spiritualism, reading mind, therefore mortal mind reading, rests on the standpoint of human belief. Both Christian Science and Spiritualism have the phenomena of mind reading. The one is, in Spiritualism, mortal mind reading, and Christian Science is divine mind reading. A terrific difference. Mortal mind reading is reading mortal mind from the basis of mortal mind. Again, just always think, mortal mind has its own realm, and within that own realm, all the things can happen that mortal mind thinks about and figures out. In divine mind reading, it is different. There we don't read from the standpoint of human beliefs. We read only from the standpoint of principle. And principle can only see ideas. Only ideas. It can read only the good. It cannot read evil. Because mind, the divine mind, does not know evil. Does not know really mortal mind's phenomena. Does not know really human thoughts. The divine mind only knows ideas. That was the basis from which she went out. So divine mind reading is really reading everything that happens within the realm of ideas, not in the realm of mortal erroneous thought. But we know that on the basis of the law of opposites, that mortal mind, that divine mind reading through the law of opposites can detect the beliefs of mortal mind. Just as the musician who has a good musical culture and is cultured in music, he can detect its opposite. Because he can detect his opposite, not because he knows the opposite, because it does not coincide, it's not the same as the two. So when a tone is out of tune, he can detect it, not because he knows the wrong tone, because he has the true tone in himself. Because I'm not cultured in music, therefore I will not detect the wrong note. Though it is a wrong note, I cannot detect it. Why not? Because I'm not cultured in music. And so, if we are cultured in the ideas of God, through the law of opposites, we always somehow will sense what is wrong about the situation. So can you see, mortal mind reads mortal mind directly. They rely on thought transference, and primitive cultures, they can read mortal mind 10 times better or 100 times better than the modern mortal mind readers. We only have lived now over many thousand years in a culture where we have not cultured mortal mind reading, telepathy, where we have not cultured that, so that talent has gone lost. Thank God it got lost. But primitive cultures, they still have that. And for them it's natural to read thought of other people, or to read thought or messages that are sent over long distances. They have no difficulties. Then we come to life, where we see that mentality always projects its own images or forms of thought. If I have the mentality of Christian Science, I project only constructive thoughts. If I have the mentality of mortal mind, I will always project mortal thoughts. But fundamentally, it's always the same law of life that happens, that we are the father or the creator of our own universe. We can be the erroneous father of a universe by building on mortal thought, or we can be the true father of the universe by projecting constantly true ideas into the universe. So it is quite clear what she says here, that we see what we believe and believe what we see, because it's in the realm of mortal mind. In truth, we have that spiritualism can never be conscious of true reality, whereas in Christian Science we can call all thought into consciousness. See, here the central point is again consciousness. There again we have to be careful, is that consciousness a consciousness of mortal mind or is it a consciousness of truth? Just by saying consciousness, we don't know what kind of consciousness we mean. So we must see that that consciousness, which is cultured by mortal thought, by human beliefs, is a consciousness that can never see reality. Though it is consciousness, it can never see the truth, it can never see reality. Mortal consciousness can never see reality. Whereas in Christian Science we are trained into the consciousness of truth, and so in truth, which is the truth about everything, truth can always be conscious of whatever is real and right. And so we can be conscious of all that which has always been true in history. Right back, we can read today Socrates' thought and Aristotle's thought. We can read Jesus' thoughts just by going back to truth. Whatever is true, we still can read. And we still can make conscious. So this is really that part where it says that the consciousness of truth, you see, can really bring to the surface the subconscious, the archetypal consciousness, the collective consciousness, the universal subconscious, the unconscious. See, that's the point, that the truth consciousness can make conscious what has been laying dormant and bring it up, so to say, to consciousness. That's what truth can do. Whereas mortal consciousness can only read its own realm. It can never read the realm of truth consciousness. That's the difference. Whereas truth consciousness can always bring back whatever has been true and bring it right up to the true consciousness.